This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham.
A new year of uncertainty begins for Central Illinois farmers like Doug Schroeder, whose bottom line being held hostage by the U.S. trade war with China.
Using food as a way to strike back at a country has never worked over time. The consumers in both countries end up paying the price.
You visit Schroeder's farm in Bellflower to learn how he's been impacted by the standoff. And a deep dive into the new Pritzker administration agenda. And John Norton brings you some bluegrass from Trampled by Turtles. All that after a GLT news update. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. The new year begins with even more uncertainty for Central Illinois farmers whose bottom lines are being held hostage by the U.S. trade war with China. U.S. negotiators just wrapped up 3 days of trade talks with Chinese officials in Beijing, but no deal was reached. I visited a Central Illinois farmer this week to learn how he's been impacted by the standoff. All around Doug Schroeder's farm in Bellflower, in southeastern McLean County, there are remnants of a more profitable time. A 10,000-square-foot shed with heated floors they put up in 2011 when they were making money. $2 million in machinery, a faster system for moving grain between trucks and storage.
It's this great big hole in the side of the bin, and you pull a truck under it. I mean, it'll load a truck in no time at all. Quiet, takes no energy.
But this year, Schroeder won't be replacing any of that machinery. The ongoing trade dispute with China has hit soybean farmers like Schroeder hard. Prices dropped as China almost entirely stopped buying soybeans last year. And Schroeder says it's a double whammy because trade issues have also driven up the price of steel. That's the material used to make things like tractors.
And so not only are we getting less for our product that we're selling, but we have to pay more for the inputs we need to buy to make and produce corn and soybeans. So we kind of get kicked twice in this whole thing. You know, if you're not making the money, it's really hard to spend the money.
China used to be the biggest buyer of American soybeans. About a quarter of all Illinois beans typically go to China. But now, in retaliation for similar U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports, China imposed a 25% tariff on imports of U.S. soybeans, resulting in a dramatic drop in shipments.
The day the Chinese announced that tariff, the price of our soybeans dropped about 20%.
The average price for a bushel of soybeans has been around $11 for the last decade or so. Supply and demand is key here. China cuts into demand, and then last fall at harvest time, American farmers produced a record 4.6 billion bushels of beans. Supply up, demand down.
And then during harvest, I mean, we were selling beans here, or had the opportunity to sell beans for less than $8. I mean, there was a 7 in front of them, and that's historically a very, very low number.
That's changed the normal post-harvest routine for many farmers. Some waited to sell their beans, hoping for prices to tick up a bit. Grain elevators filled up. Some expanded their storage capacity. Here's Mike Levin, Director of Public Policy and Regulatory Affairs for the Illinois Soybean Association, based in Bloomington.
A negative effect, of course, on these tariffs and on our soybean producers has really become a reality as we step into, you know, the new year. We're now worried, of course, about the future. And many of my farmers are worried about their businesses and if they're going to continue on.
Doug Schroeder is a relatively large farmer, working over 4,000 acres in McLean, Piatt, and Champaign counties with his son and son-in-law. Tough trade disputes are actually the reason he grows corn and beans in the first place. Schroeder's father was a cattle farmer until the mid-70s, when growing Russian imports drove up the price of corn and farmland. So he switched to corn and beans. Then Russia invaded Afghanistan, and the Carter administration enacted a grain embargo against Russia.
The price of grain then crashed, and the price of land then followed. And the next thing you know, Willie Nelson came to the University of Illinois, and they had Farm Aid. I mean, that was really, really a hard time, and that's when I was kind of cutting my teeth out here.
Schroeder says he agrees that the U.S.-China trade relationship needed to be rebalanced. A lot of farmers do. but not like what the Trump administration has done.
But using food as a way to strike back at a country has never worked over time. The consumers in both countries end up paying the price.
To soften the blow for farmers, the Trump administration has earmarked $9.5 billion in direct payments to growers of soybeans, corn, wheat, and other commodities most affected by tariffs.
The market facilitation program will help, but it won't make us whole.
The first round of payments went out in September. Schroeder's firm applied for payments at the end of 2018, expecting the money sometime in 2019. Emphasis on the sometime.
It's funny how stuff works out, but you know, the government shut down. You know, are our payments going to come or are they not going to come? We've been led to believe that they will come, but yet they haven't hit the mailbox yet. So time will tell. But what we really want is not aid. What we really want is just fair trade.
The deadline to sign up for the second round of payments was January 15th, but that's been extended indefinitely because with the shutdown, farmers haven't been able to apply with the USDA. And GLT was unable to find out how much has already been distributed to Central Illinois farmers because of the shutdown. The USDA press office is closed. Here's Mike Levin with the Illinois Soybean Association.
So we, of course, welcome these payments, but we'll say that it is a short-term fix. A very short-term fix.
Now, attention turns to the 2019 planting season. Farmers like Doug Schroeder say they're not going to be making any big capital purchases. That trickles down across the economy. As a result, farm columnist Alan Giebert from Delavan says expect even more consolidation in farm equipment dealers.
Competition is going to be incredibly tough in the coming year for machinery dealers, seed dealers, fertilizer dealers, you name it.
The Trump administration reached a 90-day trade truce with China last month, buying time for talks that continued this week in Beijing. That included a Chinese pledge to buy 1 to 2 million metric tons of soybeans. But Giebert says that purchase and the truce don't mean a whole lot just yet.
The 1 million metric ton is truly a drop in the export ocean. It's not very much. It's 1/30. So while every bit is good, I mean, I'd rather have one scoop of ice cream than not having any, but 30 sounds like a whole lot better. I mean, especially if that's where you were a year ago.
For Giebert, this whole trade dispute with China reveals a bigger issue with American farm policy, a policy supported by trade groups like the Farm Bureau and the Soybean Association. Giebert says our farm policy is focused on commodity production, exports, profits, efficiency, not food or rural development. That farm policy, he says, when paired with the Trump administration's tariff approach on trade, makes for a losing combination.
You can do whatever you want, but if you're doing the wrong thing, as relative to the farm policy we have, and we are right now, then you have a circular firing squad. You really don't have a policy that's going to work now or in the future.
Giebert says one thing that's missing from U.S. farm policy, including the new farm bill, is an emphasis on rural America, which has been hollowed out in recent decades. That, he says, happens as ag giants like Monsanto and Deere continue to make money, even during this trade dispute. That's because the U.S. government is sending farmers money.
If you're going to give these guys cocaine, they're going to get addicted.
Doug Schroeder is on the Illinois Soybean Association's board of directors, too. He's headed to China on Saturday for a trade trip to meet with importers.
These are very, very smart people in China, very, very smart people in Washington. Let's get together. Let's get this thing worked out. The world's becoming a more interwoven place all the time. There's got to be a win-win situation here somehow. So we're hopeful that both these governments will get together, sit down, and move ahead in a positive direction.
That's McLean County farmer Doug Schroeder. During this week's trade talks in Beijing, American trade officials say the two sides discussed China's pledge to buy a substantial amount of American ag, energy, and manufacturing products, but no deal was reached. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Illinois farmers are getting older. There are fewer of them. The average size of a farm is rising sharply, as it has for decades, as rural areas hollow out and agribusiness increasingly becomes corporate and big business. Many states are doing more than Illinois to counter these trends, says Madeline Beck of Harvest Public Media reports in this first of two stories.
The Curry family farm is a little world of its own. Creeks and ponds and rolling hills in the middle of a pretty flat central Illinois. Each night, it's hog feeding time. Kim Curry said the property has been in the family since 1886, but she only moved there in 2008 when her father was dying of cancer. Now she says she can't keep up with it all.
We just don't have the energy to deal with the fencing.
Curry works for the state, comes home to her sister and niece, and they tend to the animals, which include hogs, chickens, cows, and 7 dogs. She maybe eats dinner by 8. She wants to sell about 80 acres of hilly grazing property, so she posted it this summer on a regional ag organization's website.
It really has potential with someone younger, more energy.
But Curry hasn't had any takers. She used that site because it was free and was the only place she knew about.
I didn't know to look.
There are other places in Illinois where you can advertise property for sale, like online and newspaper classifieds, but no large-scale state-run program like what's next door in Iowa. It's called AgLink, a database meant to link new farmers wanting to rent or buy land with tenured farmers wanting to provide those kinds of opportunities. And it's run by Iowa State University's Extension and Outreach. In a state where nearly a third of Iowa farmland owners are older than 75, David Baker with AgLink says he has requests from way more beginning farmers than older farmers.
So I would say 11 to 1, 12 to 1. I need more of the farm families to say, we have a legitimate business and we'd like to see it go on into the future. We'd like to support our communities by having this business here.
About 20 states have something similar to AgLink, some public, some private, and at least in Iowa, could use more interest from the older generation because fewer kids are staying on the farm. And if there isn't someone to pass the farm on to, it could become part of a larger operation, taking away opportunities for new farmers. Sally Worley is with Practical Farmers of Iowa, a group that promotes farm sustainability and healthy environments. She calls a major land transfer imminent.
The biological clock is ticking for a lot of those farmland owners.
And she's concerned about what that could mean for farm communities if farmland consolidation continues. Things like fewer people and slower economies. But she acknowledges it's hard to even think about retiring from farming.
You get so passionate about what you do that it's hard to pull back the reins and let somebody else lead.
And part of the problem is that people have to face death. Mervin Roth encourages farmers not to wait for the inevitable. He's a farm manager in Macomb, Illinois, who helps keep a farm operation running when farmers die and pass on property to kids who don't farm. He says a plan can ensure a farm keeps running a certain way after death. Poor planning, on the other hand, can lead to arguments.
One family member wants to do one thing, one family member wants to do another, and so they call us in as a referee.
But the farmers who hold on until they die have an incentive to do so. Their property doesn't get taxed when they pass it down to their children, but those kids may already be in their 50s and 60s. Meanwhile, there are young farmers and beginning farmers watching and waiting for someone to give them an opportunity. Madeline Beck, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is an Illinois reporting cooperative covering ag issues. Tomorrow on Sound Ideas, Madeline Beck has her second report on the issue of farm succession. This is Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from Brad Barker Honda, where the service experts have more than 200 years combined experience. Whether it's routine maintenance or a problem, Brad Barker's qualified technicians can help. More information available at bradbarkerhonda.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker takes office next week on the heels of the most decisive election victory in a generation. And he'll be working to pass his agenda through the biggest Democratic majorities in the General Assembly since the 1960s. That raises a question. What precisely does that agenda consist of? For this week's Illinois Issues Report, State House editor Brian Mackey set out to catalog the Pritzker agenda. He spoke with IPR's Sean Crawford.
So, Brian, one of the critiques we heard a lot during the campaign was that Pritzker was not getting specific on policies. Is that what you found?
No. Pretty surprisingly, that's not what I found. I was sort of expecting that. And I think if you base your judgment of Pritzker on what was in the television advertising.
It's time for a governor who will fight for the state of Illinois.
And what was in the debate performances and his speeches, you know, that stuff is geared for a mass audience. It's geared to be consumed in 10-second increments on the television news or on commercials before people have a chance to reach their DVR button. And it's pretty simplified.
That's why I'm asking for your vote in this election.
But if you actually dig down a little bit, he did have a very detailed policy section on his website. There were 21 separate web pages dealing with a bunch of different issue areas. And I just was curious. I added it all up. There are more than 19,000 words of policies. Now, a lot of this stuff is principles, more so than actual specific initiatives, but I was surprised to find that there were a fair amount of specifics there. Reviewing that, I actually even went back and did listen to the debates, and he does, from time to time, get pretty specific even in that context between all the sort of attacking and rounder failed stuff we heard too.
Let me say why progressive income tax is so incredibly important for this state. In those communities that have been forgotten, that is where we need to focus real resources. I'm in favor of independent maps so you have more competitive elections. I'm in favor of legislative leader term limits. I was the first candidate to put out a plan for expanding health care across the state of Illinois. Of course, we ought to ban bump stocks and ban high-capacity magazines and pass a gun dealer licensing bill. I really believe that we should look seriously at building that airport.
Even the Piatone Airport, which who has talked about that in state government for the last 4 to 8 years, got a specific mention in a debate. And as he mentioned there, you heard his plan for opening the state Medicaid program for everyone. And so there is actually quite a bit there. It's a long checklist if you want to follow along at home.
Well, arguably the biggest issue facing the state is the financial problems it has. What's his plan there?
Well, we heard him a moment ago talking about the graduated or progressive income tax. From his standpoint, that is not an immediate fix. That takes 2 years before it could go on the ballot, and then voters still have to approve it, and there's going to be a lot of opposition to that. So in the interim, he had previously talked about changing the state tax system to make it introduce a little more progressivity, try and get more money from people, but he seems to have backed off of that. So really, it's a bit of a mystery where he's going to try and fix the financial problems. His budget address is in February, and we'll be waiting to hear where he stands on that.
So we know he has a lot of priorities. Do we know what his top priorities are?
Yeah, his people basically say he's going to start by focusing on, I guess what they call the kitchen table issues, raising the minimum wage, trying to bolster the support for labor unions in state government, things like that, things that with Democratic supermajorities should be fairly easy for him to get through and perhaps set some of the more challenging, expensive plans for later in his administration.
IPR's Sean Crawford speaking with State House Bureau Chief Brian Mackey. GLT will carry pre-inauguration coverage and the inauguration itself on Monday.
It starts out as a flicker, just a glimpse of an idea, maybe a question. But then the GLT newsroom works the phones, checks into it, and it turns out it's more than an idea. It's a good idea. What's life like for a candidate after losing an election?
Just because you lose an election doesn't necessarily mean that you don't keep making progress.
From idea to story to your eyes and ears, this is GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Support for GLT comes from Connect Transit, providing 15-minute service between Uptown Normal and Downtown Bloomington. Get connected with Connect Transit, an award-winning public transportation provider. Details at connect-transit.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. The Heartland Festival Orchestra welcomes in the new year with a tribute to Ella Fitzgerald. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with music director David Commande about the concert in Washington, Illinois at Five Points on Saturday. Commande says Ella Fitzgerald is a fitting way to begin 2019.
Ella Fitzgerald has such a wide range of not just music, but a wide emotional range in everything she did, that I consider looking at Ella as celebrating almost the whole range of being human. She had a way of bringing a whole soul to everything that she sang that expanded the horizons of whatever it was she was singing. And so, you know, every year we have a New Year's greeting concert, which is a lot about joy. And in music, I think joy has many sides, and sometimes you get joy out of the sorrow of a song or of a sentiment. And so we picked, often it's been, you know, we've called it Vienna to Broadway. And in the Vienna to Broadway, we were celebrating the early roots of Broadway, meaning the American musical, in the Vienna operetta. So that was highly vocal. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do something that's even more American? And what more American than jazz? And what more incredibly jazz than Ella? So I was attracted when I heard about this this pair of amazing singers who can bring the book, so to speak, in Kapathia Jenkins and Aish Dahas. So I said, why not? Let's do it.
Tell us a little bit more about them. I mean, they're Aish Dahas has done a touring company of Newsies. She was in Rent. She's done a lot of different things. And Kapathia, likewise. What about their voices made them get together to do this Ella tribute?
Likewise, they sense that range, and some of the songs resonate more powerfully with one or the other. And they also happen to be great friends. I think they actually, when this show first started coming together, that friendship just deepened. They both have amazing responses to the music. And I know that if Ella were alive today, she would say, singing this music isn't about singing it the way Ella did. It's about responding to it, maybe, completely the way Ella did. So I don't think people should expect each of them to exactly imitate what Ella did, which, of course, is not the point. Even Ella would not say that. But they bring that energy and that complete soul to it that will resonate with the essence of what Ella was about.
Let's listen to a little bit of Kapathia Jenkins and Aish Dahas.
I'm a paper music guy. You know, most of the time I'm playing from score or reading from score. But what I love about jazz is that improvisational element, and I, at least in spirit, bring that feeling to everything I do, including a Beethoven score. Not meaning expecting to change the notes in any way, but as you know, the way you connect the notes is where the music lives. So this is going to be a great adventure for all of us.
In interpreting some of Ella's hits, Tisket a Tasket, The Man I Love, Don't Mean a Thing, and on, I mean, you can go to hundreds of different ones. How does she stand out from other jazz immortals like Sarah Vaughan or Billie Holiday?
That's a great question. I think the nature of the response, the nature of her instrument, the range of her voice, the way she would play with not just the tune but the rhythm. You know, the dog walked across the road, the dog walked across the road. You can say the same sentence in countless ways, and you can sing the same tune in so many different ways. And she had this spontaneity. If you watch her or listen to her, for example, in How High the Moon, you don't know. Of course, there's the scat improvisation, but even the lyric. And then if you watch some of the shows where she was sitting with somebody like Frank Sinatra or Sammy Davis Jr., and she's singing something that she has sung, and it's changed partly because of them and because they're playing back and forth. And I think it's so in the moment that not only the cool way she plays with it in that moment, but the fact that she's making it up that way, I think that comes across. Everybody gets that.
Thank you. Somewhere there's music, I'll paint the tune. Somewhere there's heather, I'll hide the moon. There is no love when love is far away too. Till it comes true that you love me as I love you. Somewhere there's heaven, it's where you are. Somewhere there's music, how near, how far. The darkest night would shine if you would come to me soon. Until you will, I'll steal my heart. I'll hide the moon. High, high the moon is the name of this song. Though the words may be wrong, we're singing it because you asked for it. So we're swinging it just for you. How high the moon, does it touch the stars? How high the moon, does it reach up to Mars? Though the words may be wrong to this song, we're asking how high, 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 high.
And the phrasing is what you're focusing on there, but her tone is also really remarkable. She performed for more than half a century, and a lot of singers, as they get older, their voice changes and they become sometimes richer, sometimes it begins to blur in a pleasing kind of way. She never really lost the early crispness of her voice, it seems.
Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay. He'll look at me and smile, and I'll understand. And in a little while, he'll take my hand. And though it seems absurd, I know we both won't say a word. Maybe I shall meet him Sunday, maybe Monday, maybe not. Still, I'm sure to meet him one day, maybe Tuesday will be my good news.
build a little home just meant for two, from which I'll never roam. Who would you?
That's a late in life recording of The Man I Love with Ella Fitzgerald.
I agree. That is a big part of her treasure. And then also its range. I've got one of these scores, you know, that when you have an orchestral arrangement of these tunes, you'll have that paper music, and as some of the listeners will know, you might have a pair of eighth notes that really are not played like two eighth notes, but they're swung, which means the rhythm gets changed. But then the melody will turn around, and then but of course this score says alto solo, and it may be notated in one octave, and Ella might sing it in another octave higher or above that, or take a flight even above that. And her range was unbelievable, and the clarity, and she could growl next to Louis Armstrong, and she could soar so high and so clear and so pure without strain. It was amazing.
David Commende is the music director of the Heartland Festival Orchestra, talking about a tribute to Ella with Kapathia Jenkins and Aisha DeHaas coming up at Five Points in Washington, Illinois on Saturday. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
David Commende spoke with Charlie Schlenker. A tribute to Ella is Saturday evening at 7:30 at Five Points in Washington. 10 Illinois State University music faculty members perform with the Heartland Festival Orchestra.
A little girlie picked it up and put it in her pocket. She was trucking on down the avenue. Not a single thing to do. She went peck, peck, pecking.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. McLean County's John Wesley Powell Audubon Society participated in last month's 119th annual Christmas bird count. GLT's Mary Cullen speaks with Society member Angelo Caparella about bird species trends in McLean County, including a record number of bald eagles sighted.
This year was the 119th Christmas bird count organized by the National Audubon Society. Locally, we've been doing it since 1967. What we found this year was we got a little bit fewer species than in some recent years. We had 59 species on count day, which was December 15th. And it was interesting that was the case, because usually what determines the number of species we get is whether or not there's open water with our reservoirs and ponds, because if there isn't, then we just don't get much waterfowl. What we think happened this year was there was that blizzard and rough weather, wintry weather in November, before it then turned warm again. And we think that may have chased things a little further south and out of our area, even though we retained, during the count, open water. So our record number of individuals we've ever gotten were 76 species in 2007.
Okay.
And we'd been trending in recent years into the mid-60s in terms of the number of species. So we were down a little bit. And it'll be very interesting when we look at Christmas bird counts done elsewhere in central Illinois if that holds true for those counts as well.
The count you said this year was at
59. 59 species. When we do these counts, we count not only the number of species, but the number of individuals per species. And we have field parties that go within a 15-mile diameter circle. So there are several procedures we have to follow. We do it on a particular day during a two-week window. Locally, we always pick the first weekend within that period, allowable period. And then it's a 24-hour potential count, but we typically do sunrise to sunset. We assign our best birders to different parts of that 15-mile diameter count circle area, which runs up to the north through the two reservoirs, and to the south it cuts through part of Bloomington. Then we assign these really good birders to count every species and every individual of every species that they see, and that's what goes into the report to the National Audubon Society. They then will centralize the counts from all over North America, even into South America. It'll give us a nice continent-wise snapshot of bird populations across species and across areas. And so it produces a lot of valuable data that we can use to monitor over time trends in bird distributions, numbers, that type of thing.
comparing this year's results to last year's results, I know you mentioned the unique weather that we had in November with the blizzard and then the heating trend, and now we're kind of back to cold weather again. But how did that compare to last year? Did you see a noticeable change?
Yeah, you can't really compare year to year. You need to look trends over multiple years. And again, we were low on waterfowl, which we shouldn't have been based on the open water. But again, we think that they were just chased further south back in November. We did have, we did get red-breasted nuthatches, which is an irregularly eruptive species. That is, some years it's not here at all. It will often just stay up in the boreal forest of Canada and the northern United States. But other years, when the food isn't so good, they will go what's called an eruption. And that means that they're searching for food further south than normal. And we, as well as many other counts that were done, did find that they were in our area as well, red-breasted nuthatches. So that was kind of exciting. And there were some things that we should have gotten that we didn't. Occasionally, it's hard, or sometimes it's just hard to get certain species because we know they're here, but their detectability can be such that on a single day, you might not see them. But we really didn't have any real oddities. We did notice that the New World sparrow species seemed to be low in both numbers and species. So we did have some, but again, these kind of trends, was that something unique just to our area this year? Was that found across central or the state of Illinois? We won't know until all of the counts come in and are compiled. Because you always see some variation from year to year on these things. And the question is, when does a variation indicate a trend versus just year-to-year variation?
Is there any other species that we noticed either new to the area or increased in the area?
Yes. Not surprisingly, although still great, we had our record number of bald eagles. We had 13 bald eagles on the count. They've been going up every year as more and more eagles are nesting in our area. We're up to around approximately 6 bald eagle nests just in McLean County alone. And those eagles will stay around and feed wherever there's open water. And this year we were lucky that we had a record number of 13 on the count. So that was very cool.
Definitely. What about the impact of climate change on these different bird species?
That's definitely a huge impact. In fact, the data from the Christmas bird counts particularly has been used by National Audubon to show that species are trying to adapt by adjusting their wintering ranges. And in fact, about half of our North American species, I think they looked at 344 of the species that they looked at, are going to be in real trouble because climate change is really stressing birds out as they try to adjust to where should I be when, where are my food sources going to be, and all of this. And so this kind of data has been feeding into the climate reports showing that a lot of our birds are going to be really stressed through this human-caused climate change.
That was Angelo Caparella of the John Wesley Powell Audubon Society speaking with GLT's Mary Cullen. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Dave Simonette of the Duluth, Minnesota-based Trampled by Turtles says the sextet has reflected and recalibrated its music and is back on the road with a fresh-sounding new album after a recent hiatus. The bluegrass outfit plays the Castle Theater this Tuesday night. GLT's John Norton, a Duluth native himself, caught up with Simonette via Skype to talk about the hiatus, their unlikely northern Minnesota launching point. I also talked about Simonette's passion for collecting and playing vinyl.
Yeah, that's true.
How much of a fan are you?
Well, it's a problem.
All the proceeds from the record sales go directly to the vinyl store.
Go to record sales, yeah.
Well, we've got three really good vinyl stores in town. When you're here on Tuesday, you should definitely check it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a pretty common thing for me to do on our downtime during the day, for sure.
Where did the vinyl fetish come from?
I don't really know. I mean, I grew up with it in my house, but, you know, I didn't think anything of it. I guess that was just the way my parents listened to music. I remember when I was living in Duluth, God, this must have been, you know, maybe like the year 2000 or 2001, there was this enormous old funky vinyl and bookstore downtown, which has since closed. It was called Carlson's. It was probably 3,000 square feet of just unorganized bins of vinyl and then a bookstore, which is equally as large. So I didn't have a lot of money, and it was kind of a good way to, you could find, you know, I'd find 10 records for $12 or something. And I would just go in there and explore. And so that was probably what started it then.
Felt like you were in heaven, probably?
Yeah, it's kind of a good place to lose the time of day, you know.
Talking with Dave Simonette of Trampled by Turtles. The band itself formed in Duluth, Minnesota. You said you're from Mankato, but it formed in Duluth. Not exactly a hotbed of bluegrass music, right?
No. No, especially at the time. I'd say there's probably quite a bit more there now. But, you know, when we started playing 2003, it was more of an exploratory endeavor. You know, most of us were playing in rock bands in town and wanted to do kind of an acoustic thing on the side. And our mandolin player, Eric, had recently got a mandolin and had kind of started to explore bluegrass and folk music. And at the time, I hadn't heard any of that stuff. So it was more like reaching out and trying to learn in a new area. I was singing like a stone in Red Wing, Minnesota. Bar called Kelly's right next to the train. Yeah, it shakes the walls and you have to stop talking. It's never much different, but it's never the same. And the guy next to me, he was fighting for nothing. Love that was over and a knife in the back. Listening to music by Trampled by Turtles, Life is Good on the Open Road is the brand new album they put out this year. Since you guys did develop in northern Minnesota, not in the hotbeds of bluegrass like the Carolinas or Tennessee or maybe Virginia, did you feel that you weren't confined to playing bluegrass a certain way? Yeah, we've always felt that way. I feel like that's probably a self-imposed thing if anybody does feel that way about their own music, but you know, like what you're saying, we didn't really have anything to go off of. So we just kind of, you know, we listened to this music and had similar instrumentation. But then, you know, we decided that we'd kind of like to try to write our own music or our own songs in that world a little bit. But yeah, definitely no rules involved. I don't want to try to pretend to be something I'm not, you know, or the band to pretend to be something we're not. And, you know, we're not from Appalachia. We didn't grow up in a coal mine. So we might play those instruments, but hopefully the songs kind of reflect more about where we're from.
Is Charlie Parr a buddy of your guys now?
Oh, yeah, he's an old friend.
Yeah, because he moved up from what, Austin, Minnesota to Duluth? And he's based out of there now.
Yeah, Austin to Minneapolis for a while, and then he's been in Duluth ever since. It's a cool place to be in a band and or just to be an artist in general, I think. Duluth is right on Lake Superior for those that haven't been there. It's right on Lake Superior, so it's kind of starkly beautiful. And it's fairly inexpensive, and there's a great art and music community there. It's a pretty wonderful place to be.
Music of Trampled by Turtles from their new album. Dave Simonette from the band, our guest via Skype here on GLT Sound Ideas. Now, for those not familiar with the band's background, you guys recorded, I believe it was like 8 albums, at least 8 studio albums, over what, 14, 15 years?
Yeah, about 15 years.
And you guys took a hiatus just a few years ago at your request. You spent more time with your other band, Dead Man Winter. And that's more of a pop rock folk. I don't know if I'm describing that accurately, but it's not a bluegrass band.
Right.
When you go back to Dead Man Winter, when you did it at that time, was that a scratch? You needed to scratch a musical itch, or was there something else going on as well?
Yeah, I'd say the scratch the musical itch is a really good way to put it. You know, Trampled had been touring, for me anyway, what it seemed like an extremely heavy amount of time, very condensed, you know, for about 13 years at the time. And it was mainly just a creative wanderlust, I guess I would call it. It could be put as simple as sometimes you just miss playing electric guitar in front of a drum kit, man. It's still a gas, you know?
Yeah.
And I had a record, I thought anyway, a record's worth of songs, and I felt like trying them out in that way. And thankfully the other guys We're cool with it. And, you know, like in any relationship, I feel like space can be kind of the first casualty. And it's such a needed quality for, especially to stay creative in a certain framework. I feel like I at least need to breathe a little bit and to be able to get out and do other things. And in the end, it just helps all the projects, I think.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that you guys are all still good buddies, because in an interview I read, one of your bandmates, Eric Berry, said at first he was like, man, I didn't really want to do this. But later he said, you know what, 6 months after the break, he noticed that there was some wisdom in actually separating for a little bit. And he noticed his own internal musical monologue was changing. Did you see something similar during that time
off?
Yeah,
I absolutely did. And, you know, I could have easily used those songs for Trampled, but it was just as simple as playing the, you know, my songs with a different group of people. I mean, everybody has their own style, and, you know, musical relationships with different people vary. You know, creatively, it was just healthy to switch that. It wasn't anything negative going on with what I was in, but it was just simply just to try something else and see where it went. So for me, I feel like it helped me musically a lot.
I wasn't higher than I was supposed to be, but the walls froze through and the shattered. I'm partially peaceful, sitting in an empty room. While the lights outside never mattered.
To my ears, and this is no reflection on the previous albums, because you guys hit number one on Billboard 3 different times and you got fans all over the world, but there seems to be a perceptible joy on this new album called Life is Good on the Open Road, a looseness to it, a joy to it that I wasn't hearing on at least the few albums leading up to this one now.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, because it felt that way to us too. I mean, when we made it, it was just fun.
I'm a pretender, sloppy in the morning sun. All the lies I live make me wonder. And I had a bottle filled it with the only one.
We had decided early on in the process that we wanted to do something real loose and live, and we pretty much just went to the studio and sat in a circle and played the songs, you know, and they were all brand new. So there's something there too to go for that kind of vibe when people haven't rehearsed these very much. You just did it live to tape, and we didn't have any plans for it either. We just wanted to go and see if we might make a record. So there was no pressure. It was really fun to be back playing music together. I feel like everybody had more fun doing that than we had in a long time.
Who's the Steinbeck fan?
Me.
Thank You, Mr. Steinbeck is one of the songs on this new album.
That's right.
I was a lot younger when I was a fighter, and as he could get me out of any jam, I packed up and left a part of me waiting. But
at one point, I thought I'd read all his books, and then I found about another 20 of them, so I didn't realize how much he'd put out. But, his writing, it kind of changed the way I look at writing a long time ago, the way he describes really anything, especially early on. I think the first book of his, well, I read Grapes of Wrath in high school, and then, you know, I got into the rest, and then I feel like it's very musical the way he writes anyway, but one book in particular, Travels with Charlie, I felt like was in the same vein as our record, not in how it was written, but the point of the record for me was to kind of celebrate a life traveling playing music. You know, it was something I felt that I had taken for granted, and I had lost kind of my joy there, lost a love for it a little bit, and I wanted to get back and remember that it's a really cool life, you know, and it's really exciting, and a lot of people would probably love to try it, and I should probably appreciate that. And there's a lot of great parts about it, and I feel like that book, Travels with Charlie, really celebrates the wanderlust that's probably in all of us.
And travels with Charlie, tucked under my arm, got the road to yourself when you're out this early. I'm thinking about you wherever you are.
It's Dave Simonette of Trampled by Turtles speaking via Skype with GLT's John Norton. The Bluegrass Sextet plays the Castle Theater on Tuesday night. You can also hear Trampled by Turtles on GLT's Acousticity. Listen right now at WGLT.org or tonight at 7 on 89.1 FM. You can discover more local music and hear from artists playing in Central Illinois, the GLT Music Podcast. Find it on NPR One or your favorite podcast app. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. WGLT.org is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories, with help today from Charlie Schlenker, Mary Cullen, and the pride and joy of Duluth, Minnesota, John Norton. I'm Ryan Denham. You can subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas, so comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLTFM, or follow us on Twitter, we're at WGLT News, and I'm at Ryan WGLT. Let's hear a bit more of our friends Trampled by Turtles. I don't know if I can fake it anymore. Blood in the water, we're getting out of here. Blood in the water, we're getting out of here. Yeah, blood in the water, we're getting out of here. Blood in the water. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.